bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Welcome to the big show, finally. It's only taken an extra 25 hours to get here, but... what an arse. Oh, yeah. I've got to offer profound apologies to the people whose video aren't working, and that's Jeff, and I should have checked that before we started, really, and James and Gaz, because and Carl and Sarah, who aren't here, because I should have been here last night to do it, and I completely miscalculated the amount of time it would take, and I completely forgot I got a sodding thing to do yesterday. The whole week has been a pretty much pointless exercise as far as I'm concerned. Never mind. Joining me to discuss the week's technology news, four fantastic panellists, very patient fantastic panellists. First one, James Hart.
It's been 3 weeks and I've completely forgotten how to do this. So how do we find everybody? Oh, that's the end, isn't it?
What do you mean, how do we find everyone?
How do we get hold of you?
That's right at the end.
It's the end.
you buy him a drink and no, wait, that's not what you meant.
I got no video from you, Jeff, by the way.
Oh, that's just a big bucket of awesome.
Yeah. have you been good, James?
Moderately good, yes. I thought that spring was going to be happening, but you know, I gave up.
Nah, that's just silly. never mind, mate. It'll all come good. You've been playing, haven't you? Because your pick at the end of the night is going to be something special.
I very much enjoyed setting it up last night. I had my fingers crossed because I wasn't home in time for the Mac and the photo show, so I couldn't try it out. But yes, it's working.
Yes. Good man. We'll keep with bated breath because you will hear later what that is. Jeff Gamet is joining us. Hello, mate. Sorry about last night.
That's okay. I still love you. Hugs.
Good man. How have you been since this afternoon when you stepped in manfully at the last minute for the Mac show as well, because my booking skills are crap?
I think I'm doing all right. There was enough lead time for the show this afternoon. I actually had a chance to comb my hair, so I feel like I'm far more professional. Excellent. And yet I know I'm not.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Do appreciate it. Last minute stand-in, who's had about 45 minutes to prepare or more. Kelly Gamont, who's gone blank as well.
Oh!
Kelly in a dark room with a dark sheet over a dark head.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Start your video again, girl. How have you been?
All right. Not bad. How about you?
Yeah, all right. Okay. Not too bad. Had better dice. That goes for the last 24 hours. And last but by no means least, a man who hasn't been on the network for a while because his job changed, Gazmaz. How's it
going,
mate?
Good evening.
Good to have you back on.
It's just to prove.
That is you.
I'm doing very, very well, if I'm still online, that is.
Yeah, you're here.
We've lost video, unfortunately.
I hear you, but Justin's going to be pulling off.
We haven't lost your video, Gaz. Your video's fine.
No, you're fine. Super. It's just the world is no longer seeing us.
Yeah, when I look at the page.
Well, actually, yeah, I'm doing absolutely sponrific, and you're dead right. Yes, job has changed, means I can't be on for, well, other than evenings like this one. So, yeah, we'll perhaps appear here occasionally if I'm invited back after tonight.
Of course, mate. No worries at all. Yeah, no
problem. Clearly tonight you're not the problem, Gazman.
You know, if I get to be on the show on a regular basis, clearly pretty much anyone can be on the show. So I don't think you'll have any problem getting inviting back.
Oh, I don't know, Jeff. You know me. Blue Peter and all.
That is true.
You lot are playing like ping pong here. As soon as Kelly's video appears, James's disappears.
You know,
oh, are you screwing with
noticed?
Me?
We don't get to see them at the same time.
Exactly.
I think the title of this show is Whack-a-Mole or something. Whack-a-Nerd? I don't know.
Oh, man. It's horrible. Whack-a-Skype? I'm just going to give up in a minute and go to bed and be done with it. Oh, she's got... Look, see? James is back. Kelly's gone.
What's going on? I was just rebooting the machine because the stream froze. I thought it was me. Oh, no.
Okay. Do you want me to hang up and call back?
No. It's chat room says this is like chat roulette, which... It kind of really
I'm
isn't.
Unzipping.
That's only because Jeff's not got any pants on.
Yeah, well, That's what I was told. I mean, we're doing Chat Roulette tonight.
Absolutely. To reviews, if you've got to give a review for us in iTunes, we'd be very grateful. Thank you very much. We've got one here from Smell-O-Vision, who says, I only listen to the show to find out how Simon Toon is doing. He's been around for a while. It's been so long since I hung out with the guy, and he taught me everything I know about podcasting. Glad to see he's keeping busy between checking in on Foursquare and his mentions on the show. Some of the tech on the show is reasonably good too.
Thanks.
We have the odd moment, it has to be said.
Not today. But it is. That's not this day.
We've finally got an entire panel drinking. And the other one that was a big show was one I've read it. So if you want to send us a review, put it in iTunes for us. Thank you very much, and we appreciate it. The week in tech, where's it all gone? Well, for a start off, Scott E. Vests have released a new jacket called the Tropiformer, which I thought about buying for $150 until I read the fact that it was athletic fit. Thanks, Gaz.
Sorry.
The Voodoo offices have been broken into and customers' details were stolen. Firstly, I don't care because I haven't got a clue who Voodoo are. And secondly, I really couldn't care less because I'm not one of the customers. And the third thing that bothered me about that story was that their offices were burglarized.
Oh.
Jesus. America, will you stop putting eyes'd on the end of everything?
Aluminiumized.
Tell me, Kelly and Jeff, that you don't use burglarized as a word in your everyday language.
No, I use burglarated.
Yeah. Burglarated, good man.
I just go with, burgled.
Burgled, good girl. That's the one.
Busted in and stole it.
Busted it. There you go, that's it. No, I had an argument with my cousins a while ago because I went and bought an elastic cover for the top of my golf bag when I was out there a few years ago playing golf with them, and they said, you got one of those things, it's elasticized. And on the packet, it said elasticized cover. And I said, it's frigging elasticated. It's not elasticized. And we had a huge...
I don't know that it matters, but that could be...
Oh, trust me. I'm English. It matters.
Very quickly, Kelly, before the show, you were talking about a version of the Star Wars trilogy. Can you describe that version that you prefer?
It's the despecialized edition, which apparently in the UK will be despecialated.
Yeah, the despecialated edition.
Yeah.
Can we just knit back to that Voodoo?
Yes, story? Of course, mate.
Talking about the story? What are you
talking about? The opening stories. You never talk about the opening stories. They usually just crap.
I'm not going to talk about the opening story and more about the fact that companies who have got our details, can you make sure you look after them, please?
Now, here's the thing that's interesting to me about this. This is the reason to me this was a newsworthy story, is that this wasn't a hacker tried P4SSW0RD and got in to some sort of admin file and was able to download a bunch of stuff. Somebody straight knocked down a door and walked out with a bunch of hard drives. To me, that is what makes this newsworthy, because when people's information is stolen anymore, this isn't how it's done.
Shouldn't be.
This is old school.
They were wearing a hooped jumper and a mask over their eyes only.
That saying swag.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they stole unencrypted hard drives with people's information on it.
Unencrypted.
Oh, now, that's another issue. But to me, the notable piece of this is that this is the nice traditional definition of stolen and not just...
I can't imagine too much is going to happen with those.
Teresa said the hard drives were encrypted.
And they were encrypted, were they? I didn't think they
were. That's what Teresa's saying. I'd hate for us all to get sued, especially you, Gaz.
I'll take that back.
Good man. The
hard drives were encrypted. Well done.
I do worry. I mean, I wouldn't want to manage a data center nowadays. I just wouldn't want to do it because the risk of somebody coming in with a forklift truck and a load of guns and nicking all the stuff.
It's a bit
frightening.
Give us your customer details or I'll shoot.
Exactly.
It's not really it, is it? You need some diamonds in there or something like that. Crucial have released a 1 terabyte SSD for, wait for it, $600? $450, $480 quid for a 1 terabyte drive.
Won't be that in 3 years' time.
Well, you reckon it'll be? 800?
200?
No.
It won't be that in a year's time.
SSDs really haven't come down in price that much at all, have they? So I would say that's a really good price. I would buy that now. If it was available in the UK, I'd take 450 sold.
Yeah. When terabyte hard drives were first released that were rotational, I don't think they started at $600.
Nope. We like that price. HBO have released an iOS application upgrade, which allows AirPlay. We said that on the Mac show. We do like that. That's very, very good. And
maybe very good.
In the final of the opening stories, I've had a takedown notice from YouTube for one of your little flying videos. Are you ready for this? Right. I'm going to play you the music. This is the music that is on the video that they've said they need to take down.
Okay.
If we all got a fly.
That has to be the best Barry White song I've ever heard.
Have you all got the flavour of what that song's about, yeah?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Well, the takedown notes has come from EMI Publishing. And the reason that it's come is because they reckon that it's their song, and this is the song that they reckon it is.
Of course it was that. Tip of my tongue.
Well done, YouTube's algorithm, for taking Hiley Widdly Widdlies that are on my video. I can't even remember find the bloody name of what it was called, and confusing it with Marvin Gaye singing "What's Going On."
It was called Hiley Widdly Widdly.
It was called Highland Widdly Widdly, and it's
that made the top 10 on Billboard in the United States, like 3 weeks in a row.
Well, Adam in the chat room says, "What are they deaf? There's no people involved in this. This is the problem. This is exactly the problem. There are no people involved in this process whatsoever. Now I've complained, maybe a person will actually bother to listen and go, oops, will I get an apology? Will I bollocks? I'll let you know if I do. Show takedown notice required, says Bookery. It might be.
Absolutely. Now you've done it, Ewan.
I'm just a complete
arse. Yeah, well, I'm assuming the takedown notice for this show will be because that one Marvin voice Gaye sounds just like Kelly Goumont.
Right, YouTube, you're my pick of the week already. The thing that gets me is if someone writes back and goes, because they don't bother listening, and they go, yeah, no, it's definitely, it's our content, then that's it. I get no more right of appeal. It's done. No human will get involved and no one will listen to it. That'll be it. There'll be a black mark against me on YouTube. I cannot believe that. I will be writing to my MP.
Credit rating has gone down.
Well, no, you get three of those. They wipe your account.
Yeah.
No, you haven't got the half of it, mate. If you get three illicit takedown notices against a video that you've marked for monetization, they just wipe you off. You will not be allowed on YouTube ever again.
I've got a plan, right? For people who've got like these two strikes against them, I will commission my daughter to play theme music on her viola, which is completely unrecognizable from music, let alone a tune that's been in the chart.
She'll get better.
She will. and then she'll give up. Right, our usual feature to start us off. James has brought the stories this week for This Week in Melissa Meyer.
Oh, we must have gotten a takedown notice for her song.
No, you need to shut up while the music's playing. Jesus.
Sorry, man.
It's okay. It won't. I don't think it's the first time. Now, James, you've brought these stories to us. This Week in Melissa Meyer. Please take us through Melissa Meyer this week.
The key story this week is about the whole Sumley thing, which has recently been revealed. You know, this 17-year-old lad who had his software bought by Yahoo for $30 million. And it turns out that actually, rather than being a very talented coder, he's an incredibly intelligent outsourcer because he got someone else to write it for him and sold it for 30 million. Very clever. But Yahoo.
My God.
But it
Who
turns
said
out,
entrepreneurs were dead in the UK?
It's interestingly enough that the software was built by a company called SRI, who also made Siri. And it seems that what Yahoo are trying to do is leverage the sort of the summarization, the news aggregation system that SRI are providing them, and capitalize on that, which is why they bought it. And so it was appeared again. We've not heard anything concrete from Marissa. All we're doing is putting two and two together and trying to reach something that may well be announced.
So do you reckon this Paul Young, we're showing a picture of him here. Do you reckon this, his name's like something Iello. He's garlic. Yeah, his name's garlic. do we think this boy's going to get no 30 million at all? And actually what he's going to get is a visit from the boys going, I think you'd want to leave that alone, mate, if I were you.
Quite possibly. But so
really nice app you got here. Shame.
It would be a terrible thing to happen to your mum and dad, wouldn't it?
And you just see Marissa standing at the corner, nodding. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm seeing the picture on the screen right now. Like, isn't he in One Direction? I'm confused.
It's the shirt. The top button of the shirt done up means he's a teenager, doesn't he?
It is Harry Styles, and just by saying that, I'm proving that I'm down with the kids.
That's cool. So that's one Marissa Mayer story, and the other one is that it seems that she's getting together a bunch of kind of movers and shakers from business, from advertising, from management, and taking them to a small island just north of Trinidad and Tobago, I think,
and
Caicos out and for a thought leader summit, where basically she's just going to sort of get an idea of what the hell to do next from them, which Brilliant. Is kind of interesting. It's kind of like.
She hasn't asked me.
Not sure what we're going to do now. Let's all have a holiday and have a think.
Good on her.
Which is good.
She's thinking outside the box.
They all have to fight each other to the death.
Oh, yeah.
And it's lost.
One that's left alive, she takes on as her new vice president of something.
Have you ever seen Total Wipeout?
Yahoo Survivor.
Yes.
And the closing scene is where the last one runs up to and go, I'm the last one alive. And she goes, wrong.
Bang.
Stabs him in the chest.
Melissa. Bang, stabs him in the chest.
Bang, she stabs him in the chest. Okay, yeah, okay. Fair point.
Come on, in the...
Wiggly diggly.
She's making the
draw. All the way up to this conversation, I was thinking to myself, oh, come on, I really hope I get an invitation, but it's becoming less and less attractive to me now. No.
It's Lost and Survivor comes together. There'll be a plane crash and the last one alive gets to be stabbed by Melissa Mayer.
I'll tell you what, that's a hell of a reality TV series.
It is, yeah.
The last one alive.
Have you seen Hunger Games? Hey, have you seen Hunger Games?
That's what it is.
Yeah. So the moral of the story is if Marissa Mayer asks you out for anything, take a gun.
Is this the new apprentice, says Alex? Could be.
Oh, Lord.
Could be. That was This Week in Marissa Mayer. We're not having a big debate like we had the other week with Tom Merritt on. God, that went on for ages. I don't think he grasped the idea that actually it was supposed to be a 5-minute thing where we took the piss. EE, there's the big story. Now, you guys in the Americas, you need to get up to speed on EE. They're everything everywhere. It's a merger between C-Mobile on Orange.
T-Mobile on Orange, yeah.
Yeah, right. And they've become this new firm that has enough money to get Kevin Spacey to do their ad, not Kevin Spacey, Kevin Bacon to do their adverts. And they say that they're going to allegedly double speeds in the UK on 4G to wait for it, 20 megabits a second. Now, as far as I'm aware, HSPA Plus is up to 24 megabits a second in the UK, and no one's managed to achieve that yet. And I would have thought that 4G was probably 36 or more, 48, isn't it, is up to.
Okay, so...
What kind of speeds are you guys getting?
I don't know, but what I can tell you is that 4G is not... 4G is sort of a label. It's not like an official thing. It's just sort of a nickname. Like, well, it's the fourth generation of internet stuff. And some people are using it for HSPA Plus, and some people are using it for a version of LTE who has extra letters that escape me at the moment, and there's like a third that is also being labeled as 4G, but all of them are different. And I know this because I hang out with Ben Reisig from Geekbeat TV, and he is really good at explaining all this stuff.
Well, a lot of the people
there comes a certain number of letters and I can't keep up.
There's a lot of people though that I've seen that have posted speeds on their iPhones and things like that with 4G compatibility or BlackBerry's or whatever, and they're showing stuff at 30 plus quite comfortably, even on the EE network. Why they would advertise 20, I don't know, but 20 is enough. I mean, it's great for enough for on the road. I think it's perfectly fine. But the problem you've got is the claims of what it is that they're providing. And the problem is that the Carl's put in the dock because he was going to be here tonight. The data caps are killing it. I mean, they're talking £25. So you're talking $35 here in the UK for up to 20 megabits a second. And there's an 8 gig cap for the month. Well, I mean, okay, that's cheap in comparison to what you guys pay, I know. But here in the UK, I've got 15 gigs worth of data transfer on the Three network, admittedly at HSBA Plus, for £20. So, I mean, for £5 less, I get more than or nearly twice as much. But at lower speed.
That doesn't sound bad. Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm using, trust me, in the UK, £25.
Or GIFJAF, whichever, you want, however you want to pronounce it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's supposedly unlimited.
And it's ridiculous.
And it's £12.
Mm-hmm. You said their prices are ridiculous, as in cheap.
Yeah, it's crazy. Even if you were to go, I don't even remember what it was. Like, I did some math in my head, and I went, even if the exchange rate was 2 USD to £1, I could still get like half again as much data for the same price I'm paying now for AT&T.
Yeah, I mean,
it was crazy.
Gaz, what was the price you said there? £12 for how much?
£12 for, well, it's unlimited.
And that's
with a load of texts, I don't know how many hundreds of texts. And
yeah, but that's unlimited. On your phone. That's not a dongle or anything like that.
No, it's on the phone. That's right. On the phone.
And yeah. But that's using O2's
they don't do something. It's not too far off what they do for a SIM card, which you can then obviously put in a MiFi if you wanted.
Yeah. It's what it's using O2's infrastructure, but does that give you 4G?
No,
that's HSBA Plus at best.
No.
See, I don't mind HSBA. I don't really mind 3G, 3G Plus, HSDPA Plus. I don't mind because it's quick enough for me. I don't really need 4G at the moment. I can play YouTube videos on my phone.
Well, I've gone out into a little place called Wilberstone, which is in the north of Northamptonshire. It's a little village. And it's not really, it's between two big towns, and I can stream BBC iPlayer using that network. So, yeah.
Not bad.
It's fast enough.
Exactly.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Jeff, what was the point you had? It was a while ago.
Yeah.
Kelly spoke before then.
Yeah, I'm sure whatever it was would have been profoundly life-changing for everyone. Yeah. Watching the show right now. So I'm sorry that everyone else screwed it up for you guys.
Wise words, dude. I guess. Now, I mean, the other thing that's coming on is EE is being badged as way too expensive in comparison, which a comparison to the States, we're not. I mean, it's still half the price of what you get, but it's the total quantity. Three Network do a completely unlimited package, but it's on the device that you take the card for. If you buy SIM only for data, you get a cap on it, and if you buy the dongles, you get capped at 15 gigabytes. But like I say, 15 gigabytes at HSPA for £20, I've got two of those dongles, so I get 30 gig a month of transfer, and all I've got to do is it cuts me off when I've used up one, and I switch the SIM card over, and that's it. We're away and running.
I mean, it's not quite a replacement for home broadband yet.
No.
Not quite. BT... has, where's the BT logo? There we go. BT has issued a statement saying that it doesn't believe that it needs Ofcom to control the prices that it places on broadband. This is a firm that... go ahead.
Why? Is it because they've been looking at Comcast and going, we want to do that over there where they get to charge stupid amounts of money for crap?
I think Comcast learned that off BT, to be honest.
BT's
got a multi-billion pound fibre network that it's rolling out for everyone, £1 billion of investment, and they've got funding to the tune of £1 billion from central and local governments as well to make sure it happens. But they're saying that they don't believe that Ofcom needs to control the prices that they then charge to the end users. And they're not well known or they're not well respected for offering fair deals. I mean, I've got a friend who's got a firm that I do a little bit of work for him occasionally, and he pays for an up to 20 megabit service where he is. And the best he can possibly get, because he's so far from the local BT exchange, is 8 megabits a second. He cannot get beyond 8 megabits a second, and at best he gets 2.6. And they still sold him a 20 meg service, even though he couldn't get anything better than 8.
Shenanigans.
Quite happily. And this is the firm as well. I mean, Carl's put a note in the doc here. I'm understanding this right. BT is getting paid public money to put a network in, but they don't want controls on how much they charge for the end user.
So here's the thing that confuses me about this is I think in glancing through the article, and granted, I'm not reading through the whole thing, and I don't know the ins and outs of all of this because I don't live over there. However, this is something that I think we're probably going to see unless governments the world over are able to convince enough people that they can pass a law that it's a utility, that it's like the power line, it's like the phone line, where someone puts in the network and then it's up to me to pay somebody for service over that actual existing infrastructure. Mm. And as soon as we can get internet accessibility treated like a utility, then I think that these sorts of things are going to change. But until then, I think BT's going to go, I'm going to charge whatever I want. You know, rude gesture.
Well, no, they can't.
Until
that's the point, is they actually can't do that because Ofcom does legislate and control what prices they charge because of the fact they own all the infrastructure.
Okay.
But they're complaining that they don't think they should be controlled.
Trust
me, if there's a corporation in the UK that needs control, and it's British Telecom. Well,
the issue lies in... Sorry.
Shut up.
Go on. Go on, James.
The issue lies in the fact that they originally put the copper in as part of the telecommunication system. In the Victorian era, it's slowly evolving. A massive amount of investment is required to get it up to par. And they don't have anybody else who's a stakeholder in this development. And therefore, they kind of have to go, well, we have to do it ourselves. How the hell are we going to do that? And they kind of, they may not succeed. I guess they fear they may not succeed if they don't have the ability to be able to charge whatever they not want to, but maybe need to get the job done. Let's face it, if the momentum dries up, then there's no chance of it being a utility because are there any other competitors out there? There are some places that Virgin Media will never touch, and BT connectivity is the only option. They say it's a monopoly market, but that's only because there's nobody out there putting a new local loop in.
Yeah, I mean, how much cable has Virgin Media actually put down themselves? Because a lot of it was down with Telecentral and Sentinel,
TeleWest, NCL.
They just bought the company out.
Diamond Cable,
obviously struggling.
Diamond Cable, Blue Londa. Yeah. And Birmingham Cable were the people that laid all the fibre, going back 20 years, perhaps.
Yep.
They haven't.
All right, Alex, I would like to know how much Virgin Media have actually put down. Probably not a lot, and that's probably why BT are thinking along these lines. But the government's got to step in. For the good of the country, you've got to start having cable and speed up your infrastructure.
I'm being corrected in the chat room that EE are advertising average speeds of 20 and then up to 80 megabits per second for peak speeds. So I apologise if I have that wrong. And BT are very fair, actually, people reckon. Well, Batwedge reckons. Princess Bagel says she's got the Infinity package and have excellent service.
My dad's just switched over from Virgin Media to BT, and he's a lot happier with not having to call Bangalore.
He says that again. He's just swapped over from what?
From Virgin Media to BT because he's retired now and he has problems with his broadband. He's been having problems with his broadband, and the way Virgin Media deal with it is they ship it out to Bangalore and they'll ask questions. Have you turned it off and on again? And he can barely understand a word they're saying. And eventually the service comes back no matter what they do. And he's just getting wound up by it. And he's gone for BT.
I think we're going through a little bit of swings and roundabouts because I left BT many years ago. Precisely because of the bad service I was getting through them. And went over to, as it was then, Sentinel, which then changed to Telecentral or NTL, whoever it was. And I think BT have had to start improving their service. So they might be a lot better now than they were then. But I'm actually having no problems with Virgin, other than, yes, I don't like ringing Bangalore. But you don't always get through to Bangalore, I'll be honest with you. But
sometimes you get Bristol.
Yeah, and that's as well.
No, not at all.
It sometimes depends as well, though.
I love Bristol.
Bristol. Yep. Bristol is fine. No, to be honest, I think it depends on the time of day that you're in. If you're a Monday, Friday, 9 to 5, especially if you're on the peak service, you get through to a UK engineer. And I've had a couple of guys in there. Brian was one of the guys that helped me, and he was spot on. Excellent bloke. Did it was when I actually set up the router, because the router, the Superhub, comes through with a ridiculous .1, .2 pre-setup as a hub. So to actually then try and get it into your system that's all set up for a DNS at 1.1 is just a pain in the ass.
So do we think governments should be just basically laying a lot of cable for the good of their countries? You know, what's it like in the States? Do they, you know, is the government funding cable laying over there?
Not directly, but sort of.
Yes, there are dinners happening, I think.
Yeah, there are dinners happening. And then when companies go out and lay out new fiber or new copper, whatever, then they can also get kickbacks, like tax rebates. So they get incentives, but it's not a direct thing from the government saying, here's money, go do this.
There's a reason to be bothered.
So Korea have done the right thing, because is it South Korea that have pretty much, I mean, their connection speeds are fantastic just about.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to say threatening global thermonuclear war then. My mistake.
Just clear it off and please, start
please,
it.
Hey, Kim Jong-un uses a Mac. Be careful.
Please use the correct term when talking of Korea. North or South?
South.
South. What speeds did they get, you say?
I'm not sure, but they're extremely fast. And I know my daughter, when she landed there on a route to Fiji, got some Wi-Fi at the airport, and she said, it's incredibly quick.
Yeah.
She just couldn't believe the speed she was getting over just an available Wi-Fi in the airport, which you go to our airports, and it's a nightmare trying to get a decent Wi-Fi.
I've got to say, at the moment, Gaz, you're not exactly a good advert for Virgin Media, because you're jittery as hell.
Yeah, but that's the problem, you see. They've given me great download. They've not given me great upload.
No. I mean, I've heard stories of Japanese hotels and South Korean hotels with 100 down and 100 up, which is pretty impressive in the hotels.
Yeah.
And I've heard people say in Rwanda it's 50 down and 50 up, which in hotels, which is...
Yeah, I've heard this about Rwanda.
Rwanda's got huge infrastructure, yeah. I'm not suggesting genocide is a route to improving technology in your country.
I'm glad you clarified that.
Yes, no, by the way. Windows XP at the end of this year officially comes to an abrupt halt. 1 year out now.
Abrupt halt?
Allegedly. 1 year at the end of the year, XP demises formally, and there will be no extensions. People have been warning there will be no extensions.
But they said that last time, didn't they?
No, I think they just kind of got a little bit closer and said, okay, we'll extend it. But they never said that this is absolutely the last one. And they've said, no, this is absolutely it. There will be no longer any support for Windows XP from Microsoft at the end of this year. Is that necessary? Do they need to extend it? Are businesses ready?
How messed up is Windows that a version of the operating system that's that old is still a mission critical component for all these companies, and they can't upgrade to newer versions?
Is that really always Microsoft's problem, though?
Well, Microsoft makes it their problem, because instead of rolling out a new version of the operating system and then dropping the old version, they maintain multiple versions of the operating system all the time. And while a lot of companies probably could upgrade to newer versions of Windows, they don't, I think, because they don't need to. They have something that's not broken or not that broken, and they don't want to trade that for the unknown problems of a new version of Windows. and Microsoft capitulates, and so they continue to maintain these very out-of-date versions of their operating system.
I mean, Teresa says in the chat room that there's copies of NT out there still being used.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the other problem with Windows is that if you look at the current economy that we're in, your IT manager is looking with the questions that you've just raised about the unknowns of 7 and 8 in terms of integration into the networks, looking at XP, seeing it run really, really well and have no real issues. All the business software that's out there generally runs pretty well on it. But also sitting thinking, well, money's a bit tight at the minute and XP's working and Microsoft are still issuing the upgrades and the patches and the security upgrades. Why on earth do I want to go anywhere else? And they've got a good point. It's a functioning system that for 99% of the software that companies run, as long as they're not doing really high-end graphics-based stuff, perhaps, or film rendering or something like that. I mean, even the latest version of AutoCAD, even with the 3D rendering, runs perfectly well on XP. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Do we think XP would have been killed off sooner if Vista had been more of a success?
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's a good point.
I'm not even entirely sure that's the case. Because XP was such a massive hit and had an enormous... I mean, it for workstations, it completely wiped out NT4, Windows 98, Windows 95. Pretty it much. Was the cutover point.
Mm. When yeah, but people my previous thought, company, they jumped. They were always trying... They were a pretty good company, actually, at keeping up with software versions, and they skipped Vista completely. They went straight to 7.
Yes, however... Software was written for Windows XP that will not run on Windows 7. And I'm sitting here right now, I am a perfect example of that. I've got a Yamaha mixing desk, which has only got a Windows XP driver for it. There is no Windows 7 driver because it wasn't part of their, it went out of service before they stopped selling it before Windows 7 came out. And therefore, I cannot upgrade to Windows 7 because my mixer won't work.
Could you run it on Vista?
Yes, probably. I could, the 32-bit version of Vista. However, no. And here's the however, it's exactly the same thing. And Beth said to me, well, why don't you run it on your Mac? And I said, I could run it on my Mac, but my Mac won't run 10.8 because my Mac is a Mac Mini dual core, one of the first Core Duos, sorry, beg your pardon, that it's only 32-bit. So I'm in exactly the same picker with my Mac, but there are many, many more perfectly adequate 2006, 2007 PCs running XP beautifully around the country that people don't see the need to upgrade because it costs money to do that. You can, in fact, install...
Yeah, but it costs Microsoft to keep looking after it, doesn't it? And that's absolutely why they want to get
This is where the issue lies. I'm still getting security updates. What am I going to do come April the 14th next year? I'm going to have to unplug my XP box from the network because I don't want because people are going to know that there are a massive number of unprotected machines out there and they're going to try and break them.
I think I've got to back James up on that because we used to use a beautiful Tascam desk that was FireWire to the Macs, and it worked excellently. And with the advent of moving away from Leopard to Snow Leopard, they stopped issuing a driver to Snow Leopard. So that meant that I couldn't use it on a Mac. And I thought, well, I'll tell you what, I'll run it on a Windows machine instead and then just boost it through on a 3.5mm audio cable. And they didn't issue an upgrade to Vista. They only issued an upgrade to Windows 7 and Vista. And I was... You've taken a perfectly working... I mean, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. It is upstairs in the loft, and it works perfectly. There's no faults with it whatsoever. But there is not a single machine that I've got that can run it.
But then again, how many other bits of technology that are 6 years old? 2002, 11... years old that we're still using. Very, you know, how many phones have we got through in that time?
Mm-hmm.
I'll just get my Nokia 63.
we all start getting our old phones out again. It's the older, yeah.
No, I think it's a real good problem. There's a lot of hardware outside of software, hardware that's going out because of it. And it's a real shame that they don't maintain it. But as Jeff says, they're not going to be able to sell copies of Windows 8 while XP's still running. And they're certainly not going to sell it into the enterprise market. Not a chance in hell.
Or even 7.
Well,
I mean, just to get people upgraded to something.
Yeah, I'm running Windows 7 on my laptop as my parallels machine. And it runs beautifully. And do I want 8? I don't know what, see, as a Mac user, I don't know what 8's going to give me that 7 doesn't already, apart from a different looking interface that I'm probably going to want to switch off eventually. I'm sure there's better 64 gig support and all that kind of stuff, 64-bit support, but it doesn't really enthuse
me. I love the comment from Batwench in the chat room. In college, we have a 486 with 311 that runs nuclear radiation simulation program. Perfect.
No, you say that. I did work at Sizewell B a few years ago, and I photographed their training suite, and their training room is an identical copy of the real control room, even to the folders that are on the walls, absolutely everything. You go in there, it looks exactly the same. And the whole, all the critical simulations that they ran and that kind of stuff was off a 386 that was running Windows 3.11 for work groups. I'll back her up on that. And I do work for train manufacturers, and they've got, and maintainers, and they've got whole train systems that are running on Windows 3.11. And I've said to the guys there that, you know, so you get a new piece of monitoring software that does telemetry and does stuff back over 3G, back to the operators so they can get real-time data off the trains, locations, that kind of stuff. No one's, surely the manufacturers of that software don't issue a driver for 3.11. And he said, no, they don't. I said, so how do you get around that? He said, I go home and write a driver.
Ah, oh, those were the
holy
days.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Jesus. No, but those were the days. That's last week.
Yep.
The train will only run on Windows 3.11 operating system, and I've got to go and write a driver for the new piece of telemetry that wants Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
I need to write a driver.
They're rebooting trains more and more often these days.
Oh, no. Yeah, you don't get rid of the train last year. It's a 30 to 50-year cycle. Bitcoin has had a bit of ups and downs. Apparently, it's now being traded on the stock market. The digital currency and how to go about buying it was an article in PC Pro this week. The Guardian has also issued a couple of articles warning that Bitcoin is not real currency. No shit, Sherlock. And Bitcoin has got a new high and low on the stock market, and it crashed after an all-time high as well. I think the world has gone frigging mad.
Ewan, I'll correct you there very quickly. First off, the world hasn't gone mad. A few people have gone completely Fruit Loop. It's a tiny little ecosystem that doesn't touch most of the rest of the world. And I don't think it ever will.
Well,
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're saying that this is just a couple of people that are going to crash the economy?
Is it going to have any effect on the economy?
Oh, yeah.
It's... Okay, so Bitcoin is growing. It's becoming more popular. And the big problem that I see is that it's an economy and a monetary system that works completely outside of every single government. And therein lies the problem. And that has to be scaring governments, because now you have what amounts to an essentially untraceable system for completing transactions.
Money laundering.
And, yeah, sure, you can use it for money laundering. You can use it for all kinds of illegal activities. I mean, this is, and I'm not condoning this, but if you were buying drugs, this would be the way to do it, because the money that's passing back and forth is now completely anonymous. And it all falls outside of the tax system, because governments can't track it.
Mm. The issue remains whether or not it is realizable. And the only way it can become realizable is if it is traded, if it can be publicly traded. And as soon as it becomes publicly traded, it attracts the attention of governments in the vicinities where it is being publicly traded. It's like any kind of virtual transaction. Bartering is completely legal, and all they're doing is bartering with a carefully algorithmated system, with a system that is based on an incredibly complicated algorithm that a few set, that the Venn diagram of economists and geeks, that tiny little bit in the middle, who know how to make computers work because they do Bitcoin mining and the like, and it's getting harder to make more Bitcoins as time goes on because of the algorithm. It's it needs to go outside that sphere. And to get outside that sphere, people like you and me need to become aware and respect it as a currency. And at this stage, they're not doing it. I can't understand how somebody could play for drugs with Bitcoins, because the drug dealers would need to know what to do with those Bitcoins.
Well, here's
in
the
public economy, because you can't go to Tesco's with them.
Well, this thing's hit $235.
Well, I can't go to my local Tesco's with euros.
No, nor should you.
Which
be
means
able
you
to.
Have to go to a, you have to go to an environment, a place where it can be converted into real money, and that place is governed.
Yeah, as soon as,
well, yes
as soon
and
as
no.
It's when it starts making tax, when the governments want to get tax on it, that's when people will start recognizing it.
But because they'll probably be able to find loopholes.
Whether we'll get there is another matter.
I mean, there's the current trading graph against the US dollar. So that is now trading. Bitcoin is trading, or was trading, at $235 just after April 8th. Which I find...
Dropped to 100 and then came back, right?
I don't know where it currently is right this minute, but it's not at 235. But the problem I have with this is that you trade on an economy, and the economy is supported by a gold reserve. You even talk about bartering to a certain degree, James, and you are still backed by the gold reserve of your country against that bartering process. So my question would be, where is the reserve against the Bitcoin finance? Because people have to buy it, I suppose, but it's not supported by a single currency. Yeah, but it's not supported like a currency is by a single central bank with a gold reserve that reinforces it.
I never heard of Silk Road until it was mentioned in the chat room, but that sounds a bit frightening. It's basically an online black market.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin is massive in it. And this is, again... I thought I was down with the internet and I knew what was going on, but this is a little bit kind of like, this is out there with, I wouldn't say some unpleasant forms of adult material. It's kind of like, I don't even come across even by accident. Why don't I know about this?
Where have you got a link for Silk?
Silk Road, it's called. I'll ping a link into chat room. It's a Wikipedia site for it.
Right.
Well, welcome to the wonderful world of anarchy.
Well, this is economic anarchy, isn't it?
Yeah,
pretty much.
But my question would be, when the bottom drops out of the Bitcoin market and it devalues to the point of being worthless, what does that do to the real economy? Because equally, if you say it can't be supported because there is no reserve, when it drops out, it should equally be as ineffectual. But if stock markets look at Bitcoin and see it as a value... then stock markets react on perceived value, not actual value of something. If they see that the bottom's dropping out of it, they devalue everything around it.
So it's not that much different from an internet company then, is it, really?
No. You're talking about a huge bubble here.
And it will burst.
Okay, so the weird thing about Bitcoin and publicly traded stuff and all that is that we're taking two systems that don't fit together and trying to make them work together. So I think what happens when Bitcoin stabilizes, because what I think it's going to do, now that it's had this big peak, it's going to drop back down to a more realistic level and then continue its slow climb. And it does this every year. And it's on a cycle, because there's a bunch of articles that happen pretty much annually about Bitcoin. People hear about it. The value shoots way up. Some people make some serious money buying and selling Bitcoin, and then the value drops way back down, but continues this gradual climb, and it is continually climbing overall. And so at some point, it will either become something that's just a routine part of finances, or the market will walk away from it, and Bitcoin will continue to move on just as it does now. And that's because Bitcoin is something that's designed to fit outside of the regular financial structure anyhow.
Regulated.
So I don't think they care if they're being publicly traded or not, because in the end, there's a market for people that want to have this type of electronic currency, and they'll continue to use it.
It's, I think the other thing is, I mean, this is described on the wiki. Silk Road is described as the Amazon.com of illegal drugs, or an eBay system that deals with hidden drugs in a dark corner of the web known as the Tor. After attention, the traffic's website increased dramatically, and thus Bitcoin as a currency, which was used on the site, saw a corresponding rise in value. And that was about the 25th of March. So,
am I right that Bitcoin will actually get to a point where no more Bitcoins are being can be produced?
Correct. There is a finite reserve. Well, no, it's not so much that the difficulty in getting them increases over time. Therefore, exponentially, right. the number decreases because they're harder to find. Okay. So there is a finite number, but there's an asymptote, I think is the word, isn't it? It's asymptotic. Asymptotized.
Asymptotic means it never gets to its end.
Okay, well, I'm going to go out and buy a load.
Yeah, wow. Not at $225, $235 a pop, I don't think.
Peanuts.
Apple stock's nearly cheaper.
Can you actually, when you get a Bitcoin, all the videos and all the things have got people holding little coins. They're not real, are they? All it is currency.
It's a good graphic. It's that graphic there.
Yeah, it worries that. What troubles me is that I can't keep it under my mattress.
There's my Bitcoin.
No, wait. I have a box of Bitcoins. Send me money, and I will send you the physical Bitcoins that I have.
Right, Jeff, you're on. How much for delivery? Right. 60 Bitcoins.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing as well is that Tor works on an escrow system, so that means they're creaming off the top for every transaction.
Oh, there you go.
In the transfer process. It's a PayPal-esque element, isn't it? What was the other story? What was I going to read out? I can't remember.
Google Play,
yeah, there we go. Google Play has axed 60,000 crap apps in a massive purge. Part of their spring clean of their services, Google's taken a load of the craptastic stuff and shoved it somewhere where the sun don't shine. The seedy underbelly of sour milk. There we go. James, you have got an Android phone, so you must have a fair amount of crap on it.
I don't. No. One of the things about Android phones is because they don't have the iOS sort of housekeeping, which is really clever, you're kind of limited to how many apps you can run at a time. And if you're running all those apps at a time, certainly in the background with notifications and things, you want to limit the ones to the ones you use. And therefore, I dare say the way Google has established which of the 60,000 apps to get rid of are the ones people have tried, realize are running in the background, slowing the system down, and got rid of, and therefore no longer are installed on machines. So, I mean, I could list the apps I've got installed on my phone, and you would say, yes, I've got those as well, including Untapped, obviously.
They're calling these spam apps.
Well, that's a bit frightening, isn't it, that they're called that? Because there's supposed to be some degree of security and trust into what you download from the Play Store, isn't there?
Well, there is. They put them in the spam app section.
There's a spam app section.
Ah. Yeah. Google's automated algorithms to detect the spam applications have been steadily improving, which is where they've got the benefit from to be able to get rid of the less reputable app makers who flood the space with rotten creations.
Well, this is the opposite of when, you know, a few years ago, it was like Steve Jobs would check every app. You know, we it wasn't him, actually, but you get the impression that Steve Jobs was checking every app before it went in the App Store to make sure he had his seal of approval. It's the opposite of that with Google. You can get a Google app development kit, which is shaky as heck. Write yourself a Google app, ping it to the store, and it's there for people to download.
Whether it works or not, you could probably make
a degree of, you know, if you charge even 99 cents for it, you could probably make a fair amount by people who search for something, install it, then realize it's crap, can't get the money back, and therefore, you know, the money's gone. And what they say, oh, it's only 59p, 99p, let them have it. Mm. But that's it, gone.
That means-
Might try that.
Bookery but says you can
three. Fewer. So go on.
I was going to say Bookery says you can. He'd 3D print your bitcoins, and if you send him €5, he'll sell your house.
Thanks for that. I bet there are fewer fart apps for the Android phones because they don't sound nearly as good.
Torchlight as well.
True.
Torchlight applications. And the last one, Intel have released a new line of the Xeon chips aimed at the enterprise market. They're looking to capitalize on new technology that they've unearthed. The E7 family, or Ivy Bridge EX, three times memory capacity against the previous generations, 12 terabits in, or terabytes, it says, in 8S node. I have no idea what that means. And Runshaw technology. There's some people in the chat room probably have got wood there. For the E7, E5, and E3 families of enterprise spaces. Anyone excited?
No.
I would say I'm not excited, but what this illustrates, what it brought to mind for me is a report I saw back end of last week, I think, that they're saying that with the sort of 20-something nanometer architecture, Moore's law may well be coming to an end. They simply can't sustain the level of increase in technology. They can't make chips faster and more efficient, you know, run at the small die levels that they could before. And this, in some respects, is when was the last time we heard about a new set of chips being released?
Well,
when was it?
Actually, you say that. I've got to try and find it now. But there was a program, I think it was Horizon on BBC Two last night, and they were talking about the fact that they've now got carbon atoms down to one atom thick. And the I'm going to get this completely wrong, but basically it's created a film of carbon atoms, one atom thick, which actually have got better conductivity than current silicon chips and are faster. And so that's going to be where the next technology kicks in. But that's going to be sometime down the road.
And there's also graphene. I was just about to say, graphene is the next big thing as well, allegedly. That's going to make it, I mean, that's the physical lightness as well within these things.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think we're probably waiting for a big jump, but agreed. I think we're slowing at this point in time. And does anybody need a faster PC at the moment or Mac? Who do you know?
That's a good point. I mean, there's always been this game of leapfrog, isn't there, where the architecture creates an open space and then the software fills it and clogs it, and then the architecture creates an open space and then the software fills it and clogs it.
Because, of course, you've got IO and
clogging at the moment.
You've got memory writing and reading, hard drive writing and reading. You've got a number of sort of transactions that take place outside the chip that they've got to keep up with, and the chips can easily cope with it. Then, absolutely. Well, this is one of the reasons why I think organic computing hasn't really taken off yet. It's because there hasn't been the need to change architecture just yet to do this sort of parallel processing, this trinary kind of process, the different way of doing it. Genetic processes can use trinary rather than binary, which gives you an extra number of states based on a certain number of digits, which means, you know, you can automatically get an upgrade to your processing that way. But they haven't had to invest the time and effort into that. Well, maybe they are working on these things, but they haven't come up with a product yet. Great. that can demonstrate it.
Mm.
And that's why the likes of these conventions over in Las Vegas are so disappointing, because there aren't these massive changes. They're just sort of sticking smaller things into bigger things.
So James, what they're doing at the moment is they're obviously maximizing their profits and their profit potential by bringing things like this out, which are just a small step for them to go forward.
Tweaking old tech,
Because if they don't, where's the competitive edge? Yeah.
You have to bring some out every year. Anything to add? We're done.
I don't think so.
This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net, as well as us. UK2.net, they've got a big push on their site builder application at the moment. And if you're looking to create a website and just do something very basic with it, an information, something for your local club or something like that, then site builder is absolutely brilliant. Carl, one of the guys, Carl Madden, that does the shows with us, he's had a play with site builder just as a suck it and see, and see what all the fuss is about. And he said he bought a website, bought a server space, and had a web page up in under 10 minutes. And that's including the transaction process. Wow. He said the creation of a web page took him the best part of about 40 seconds. It was absolutely easy. It's drag and drop technology. You position stuff where you want it. You put the text where you want it. You get to do what you want. And it is absolutely effortless. And Site Builder comes in at, I think it's £2.95 a month. And of course, you get a deduction on that. So you can go to our sponsors page on thebritishtechnetwork.com and you can go through to UK2, use the offer code and get a massive reduction on it. UK2 are supporters of the network. They've been that way for 3 years. They're going to be that way for another 2 years. They support us because you keep buying service from them. So thank you very much for supporting them and thank you very much to them for supporting us. Do look after them. We like them. The other thing that we've got coming up, and I've got a bloody graphic. I can't believe I've got rid of the bloody graphic for the bash.
What? You've been busy.
It was all going so well.
Oh, what an...
You know.
Yeah, it's been a flawless show up until this point. I hope you're happy.
Yeah, flawless, mate. Absolutely flawless. Wonderful. Oh, I can edit. That's a thing. I never do, but I can. Yeah,
you can threaten to edit.
I can threaten to edit. Good point. The British Tech Bash is coming up. It's the 6th of July. If you'd like to come along, then all you have to do is buy yourself a ticket. Now, people have written in a little while ago and said, who do you think you are, Glastonbury? This is not like you're buying all the bands that we've got on, because I don't think we've got any bands booked unless Jamfolder's still coming. This is your payment to assist in the costs, because I'm not paying for it out of my own pocket. I just couldn't afford it. The place that we've got is holding up to 300 people. I probably reckon we'll get about 100 to 150. We've got 40 tickets sold already, which is great. And that's only in 2 weeks. But your £20 will ensure that you get fed on the day without wanting any more. We had a pig roast last year and there was tons of pork left over. I was eating pig for bloody 2 weeks. And the other thing is that you're going to get your beer. We've already had a chat with one brewery and they're going to send us up a couple of kegs, we're hoping, as well. So it should be great real ales, great food, but you need to buy your ticket. If you're waiting and thinking, well, I'll get it nearer the time, I'll get it after payday in June, do take pity on me just a little bit. I'm not trying to hog your money and just get interest on it or anything, because it's going to sit in the PayPal account. I'm not going to touch it until I need to pay someone. But the problem is I can't book a caterer at a week's notice. So if you want to come, please book your ticket now. And then that way I'll know how many are coming and I can start booking a caterer sort of in the early May time. So, you know, this month, early May, please, please, please buy your ticket and come along. If you're going to come along and you're going to bring kids, there's several kids are going to be there already. There's loads of space inside the hall where they can do finger painting and have fun and that kind of stuff. We'll bring some stuff down for them to play with. And there's loads of toys down there as well. Because it's a community centre. But under 12s will come free.
And they'll get to see what drunk adults look like.
Yeah, under 12s will come free of charge. And but if they're coming and you've got them, just let me know so that I can cater for them. But under 12s are free of charge. Now, that's on the 6th. Now, if, like Gaz, you can't make the 6th because you're refereeing a sevens tournament, because I know a lot of people do that kind of thing.
Oh, I'm always refereeing sevens yeah, tournaments.
Exactly. Kelly's got one next week. Then you can come to the curry instead. Because on the 5th, the Friday night, at 9 p.m, there's a curry in the best curry house in the world, which is the Kismet Curry House, where I've been this evening, and it's been absolutely gorgeous food. And Paul Kirkle came and had a curry with me last Monday, just before the Gadget Show stuff, and he said it was the best curry he'd tasted ever. So it is a fantastic curry house. Come along, and on the Friday the 9th at 9 p.m, we're going to have a pile of seats, but you need to reserve your place. So tickets for that are £10. Now, don't think that that's just money that you're throwing away again. You're not. That money will go off your bill at the end of the night. So if there's a table of four people, if you all produce your ticket, you get 40 quid off your bill. 6 a year, 60 quid off your bill, and so on. We'll all be together. Don't worry about having separate tables all over the restaurant, but we're going to block an area out of the restaurant. And Milan's got an extension that's going to be finished by that point. So we'll all be together. We'll all have a great time.
Well, I hope he's finished it.
But he will have. He's finishing it in February. But we'll all have a great time. And the curry's on the 5th. But you need to buy a separate ticket, and it's the banner underneath the one for the bash. So get your tickets as soon as you can. Please come and have some fun with us, because it should be a rare old occasion. Loads of beer, loads of food, loads of fun. If you're looking for hotels on the net on the internet, then look under the sort of 3 mile radius of the B36 and B46 area in Birmingham. There we go. We might have to hold it down south next year, I think. Do we, mate? We'll see. Thank you. Right. Cool things. James, do you have a cool thing? I know you do. I know
yes,
you
well,
do.
This is something I've been working on a little while ago. Since Cosmic Vibes said that it's possible to play Justin TV and the British Tech Network through XBMC, and being a big fan of my Raspberry Pi, I thought I'm just going to put my speakers on so I can hear what you're doing. I thought I'd try putting the British Tech live on my telly in my studio, which is run off a Raspberry Pi. Yes. So bear with me for a second. I'll turn my telly around. The great thing about this is because XBMC has got a web front end. So there's the telly over there. Let me zoom in. So there's XBMC. And I can control it from my desk using a web browser. Bear with me for a second. There it is. There. Wake the little blighter up. And I go, add-ons. And then I go, British Tech Network. A little bit wonky, isn't it? A bit.
We're still in awe, mate. Don't worry about
there
it.
There we go. And then
Justin TV
live. And it loads.
Honest.
Oh, come on.
Oh, mate. I let it. Don't worry.
Hang on. One more go. Oh, no. Duh. That's me doing it on the screen.
Oh, of course it is. We need to change.
So this is just going to do this over and over again for a bit.
Duh.
But there we go. That's me watching. And the great thing about...
it's a bit laggy.
It's called Rasp BMC. And you can install TV catch-up as well, so you can play live television through a completely without a set-top box, an aerial, a skybox or anything. So Freeview television works fine. And I've also getting a BBC iPlayer plug-in, so I can basically watch everything I want on my tiny little 22-inch screen in the studio. As you can see, there's Ewan in the top left-hand corner. So there we go. That's my pick for the day. I think it's just raspbmc.com, and for £25, you can get yourself basically a digital set-top box.
Oh, wow, that's very good. Excellent. Superb. Wow. Superb.
Bib.
That was a disastrous loop there. Should have realised. Bad luck. Well done. Well spotted, James. Thank you to Charlie Pierce, who's done the XBMC app as well, which is absolutely fantastic. It is a huge lag because of the fact we're lagging going to Justin TV, and then Justin TV is lagging going to XBMC. But well done, Charlie. We are still looking into broadcasting ourselves. We've got unlimited bandwidth, so there's no reason we can't. We just need to be able to export to an RTMP file from Wirecast. So if anyone out there can do the server-side stuff and help us out with that, get in touch, britishtechnetwork.com, and we'll set that up. Good pick, sir. Well done. Jeffrey, what do you have for us, mate?
All right. I have an app that is cross-platform. So Mac, Windows, Linux. So wherever you want to run it, you can. And it's called Stellarium. And what it is it's a planetarium application that runs on your computer. So you can look at the sky and from pretty much any time, from pretty much any location you want, and see what the sky looks like. And it's so powerful that this is actually used in actual planetariums. And it supports being able to project onto a dome. And it has beautiful graphics, and it's very easy to add in modules that add in extra stars. I think that the base package comes with 600,000 stars, and then it goes up from there. And so you can see satellites, you can go to other planets and see what the sky looks like from there. You can simulate supernovas. You can do anything you want with this planetarium, and it's beautiful. And even better, it's free.
Good.
I thought I'd spotted that somewhere before. I've actually got that, and I haven't used it for a long time, Jeff. So thanks for reminding me. I've actually got that on my Mac.
Yeah, I've got your back.
It is a good app. Yeah, well, that's the rest of my weekend messed up.
Chat room's just wondering why our video's so shit compared to Twit's. And the answer's 30 grand.
Is that it?
Yeah, bloody cheeky bastards. And the rest, yeah. Kelly. Yes. What have you got for a skill? Good pick, Jeff, by the way. I'm downloading it as we speak, so that might crackle.
It's awesome.
Yeah, Kelly's video might crackle up a little bit.
A little bit. My pick this week is a utility called Dolly Drive. Dolly, mm-hmm. like a sheep. And it's...
Well, she's not a sheep.
Here's the thing. It's actually... oh, no.
Don't. Gaz is getting excited.
Okay.
No sheep noises around Gaz.
It does more than just give you a cloud backup solution. It also gives you an option for cloning. So you can do block level, like carbon copy cloner, super duper. You can make an exact mirror of your hard drive that you stash offsite as you're supposed to with good backups. And it will also let you do incremental backups like Time Machine does, where you do the incremental backups. It'll let you do that to an external hard drive while you're also doing all of it off to the cloud as well. It also has a second piece, or a third piece, I guess, because it does the cloud backup and then the local backup, whichever option you prefer. And then it also has something that is a similar function to Dropbox, where you can have things that don't have to live on your computer that you just sort of push out to the cloud, like external storage, like if it was an external hard drive, but you would have it available everywhere. And then you can also selectively sync your information here and there. So maybe there's only some folders on your iMac that you really want to sync over to your MacBook Air. You don't need the entire thing, but maybe you only need bits and pieces, and it gives you some of that. It's super fantastic. The guys behind Dolly Drive are really cool, and they've done a lot of work. Initially, what they were was they were Time Machine, but then they were in the cloud. So it was your Time Machine backups, but you would just put them someplace else. And they've evolved a lot since then. They've talked to a bunch of nerds who go, I don't really like this feature. I really want to have this feature instead. And they've done a lot to really listen to people and see what they can do to best serve the community as far as backups. They've taken a lot of the friction out of it, and they've made the process as easy as possible. So I think Dolly Drive is fantastic.
How long does it take to get your data up there, though?
Because it depends on how much data you're talking about.
Well, no, that was always my problem with Carbonite. Lovely service, fantastic, wonderful. Yeah. But with 1.75 terabytes in my MacBook, in a whole year, I never put all my data up there.
Yeah, well, there's ways around it. If most of the services, if you contact them, they have a way that they can seed for you. So that then, like, you know, you send them a terabyte hard drive or whatever. And once they've got that seeded, then all you have to do is upload the difference in the meantime, things like that. I think they're fabulous because I like that their utility is like a one-stop shop. So you open up Dolly Drive Revo, and while you're there, you can set your cloud backup. You can make a bit level copy. You can do your Delta backups, whatever it is you want to do. It's all in one place. And then if you want to restore files, which is the thing that a lot of people don't test out very well when they have a backup solution. Lots of people know how to backup, but very few people who are backing up regularly know how to actually restore from that backup information. So the cool thing about Dolly is if you're looking for something in particular, when you go to restore a file, they have the files sorted by the application. So you know it was a Word doc, you know it came out of BBEdit, you know it was a GarageBand file. The app is there, and then when you click on the app, it shows you all the documents it has associated with that application. It makes it a lot easier to track things down. They're phenomenal. They're reasonably priced. If you're looking at comparing them with other cloud backup services, and like I said, they're super friendly. I really like their collaboration because they don't make you have to set up an account already. So like if I wanted to file that I had all synced up to Dolly Drive, if I wanted to send that to you over Dropbox, you would have to go to Dropbox, create an account, and then be able to copy it over to your Dropbox folder, even though I had a public link for you. And with Dolly Drive, you don't have to do any of that. They give you a way to, they tell you like it's a Dolly Drive link, but they don't make you have to do anything in order to get to that file. It's pretty awesome.
Good.
So
$3 a month it goes from.
Can I just say, we did talk about this very, very briefly before the show. And one of the statements on the, for anybody who's not a Mac user out there, one of the statements on the front page is backup and sync and storage for people who love their Mac. So whether they are aiming particularly app Mac people, or whether it actually can go cross-platform or not, I couldn't confirm, to be honest with you. But I know that this is one that, a service that I've been looking at, because they've certainly got a European server service that I've been looking at. Well, I'm a Mac user. Yeah, okay, shoot me now.
Okay, you'll get the money. Well done, mate. Gaz, what's your pick, mate?
Right.
A cool thing.
We've heard a lot about Google Glasses, haven't we? And I kind of, for some reason, I'm a rugby referee, for those who don't know. And one of our appointment secretaries sent me this link and said, we need to get a pair of these so that we can use it in training sessions. So I looked at the price and went, okay, let's get them. And basically, they are a pair of glasses which don't actually look too bad. I haven't got them with me now because they've gone out to someone who's supposedly going to be using them over the weekend. Not me. And they have a little camera in the middle. They're reasonable glasses, actually. They don't look too bad on. And they come with a micro SIM and obviously an adapter so that you can then download the video, which is AVI. And they don't take very good images indoors, but basically a pair of glasses with adaptable lenses. So you can have dark lenses or clear lenses. It takes sound as well. I had a bit of a problem when I first tried the sound because it was delayed, which wouldn't help, especially if you're a referee, because you want to hear exactly what is going on at what point. But I basically reset the devices and the delay was minimal, so I could live with it. And they take video. It says HD video. Look at the size of the lens, you know, how HD is it going to be? But actually in daylight, they weren't too bad at all. So yeah, Google Glasses almost, possibly, for £100, reasonable price. Want to give it a go? I found them quite good fun, actually.
So you're trying to be the Aussie running around with the camera, giving HD footage back to the...
Steve Walsh.
Yeah, well, no, try hard not to be Steve Walsh, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, try hard not to be Steve Walsh. I wouldn't have bought them unless they were for a reason. I got a reason, I bought them. Actually, now I'm thinking about getting a pair. That's sad me.
How much were they?
I think it was about 104, 105 pounds, something like that.
Yeah. You don't look too much of an idiot in them either. Not too bad.
Well, when I get them back, I'll take a picture and send it to you.
Well, I've got a picture up on the feed here, if you've got the video.
Thanks.
They're chunky, it has to be said.
They're reasonable.
They're not
reasonable.
Chunky, they're big-boned.
Big-boned, sorry.
Big-boned.
My pick is Shazam. And the reason my pick is Shazam is because it does a better frigging job than YouTube's copy algorithm for EMI Publishing. EMI Publishing, if you're listening, you bunch of wankers. There you go. Where can we get a hold of you, James?
Sorry, I had to pop out. I'd got a phone call. Syzygy on Twitter or on my landline, obviously.
Good man. BT are on the phone. They want to know why you slagged them off earlier.
Absolutely.
Jeff, where are you, mate?
I'm at macobserver.com and on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamut. And I also write about horribly stupid things I see in the coffee shops. That would be at freshbrewedtales.com.
Excellent, mate. Kelly, where are you, girl?
You can find me primarily on Twitter and app.net as Verso, and you can also find me on the Tuwa Topcast, recorded Sunday evenings, US time.
Excellent. And last but by no means least, Gazmaz, where are you, mate?
At the moment, I'm just here.
Good lad.
It's not very, very helpful, is it? Okay, well, just look for that. Just look for that face, and yeah, that's me.
Only Gazmaz. A mother could laugh.
Got lots of links. I do a regular weekly podcast with a guy called Guy Searle. We call ourselves the G-Men. It's on mymac.com. We had Will on last week. Boy, did that go weird. But there you go.
Greeny, mate.
We loved it. Greeny came on. So it was good fun. It was very good fun.
Greeny's
Gazmaz, M-O. Gazmaz.com.
Gazmaz.com. I'm Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter and I'll put out some spurious crap. We'll be back again with the big show next Thursday at 8 p.m. providing we can stop the twat who runs the network from cocking it up as normal. I've not had a good week. See you next time.
At least he can get by on his looks.
I wish. Thanks, man. Bye.